Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. Today is March 13th, and this is 42 Minutes. I'm Douglas Bowles, and you're joined with William Morgan. And today we're talking to Andras Jones, the creator of Radio 8-Ball and the newly published author from ThinkBook Press of Accidental Initiations. Today is our 22nd episode. And so I suppose that makes him our fool. And so how are you doing today, Andras?
Feeling the fool energy, definitely. Sitting here in Olympia, Washington, in the lovely Martin Apartments, watching the big fluffy snowflakes fall down on the city of Olympia.
Now, that's not normal for that part of the world, though, right?
No, this is only our second snow of the year.
So what does that mean from a key standpoint?
It means I won't be driving to Seattle tonight, and I don't know. I don't know what is the meaning of snow falling on the ground. I guess it just means that my run around the tree will be colder than usual.
Okay, your run around the tree.
Yes. Well, let's back in, because when you mentioned my book, you called it Accidental Initiations, but it actually has a longer title, which is Accidental Initiations in the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia. And the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia is a Kabbalistic tree that is built into the city of Olympia. And that's mostly what my book is about, is an exploration of that Kabbalistic tree that I've been living in and around for most of my life.
Okay.
So how did you discover this tree, number one? And then number two, let's say someone is coming to your book without having any background at all in the Kabbalah. Are you going to be able to give them enough background that it's going to make sense?
Okay, well, answer to the first question. I discovered it because I was taking a Kabbalah class, and I live right next to this tree, which is built into sort of the center park area of Olympia, an area called Sylvester Park. And I had been just going up for a run in this park. And at one point, after studying the Kabbalah map for several months, I just realized that, oh my God, it's right here, that this thing I've been running is this tree. And I talk about this in my book. I brought along my Kabbalah teacher. I invited the local rabbi. We went for walks on it, and they pretty much were like, yeah, it's interesting, but it looks like what you think you see, you see. And at the very base of it, there is this kneeling Freemason, this statue, which, you know, it's not like I'm saying it's a Freemason. It says this was donated by the Freemasons of Washington State. And
that's enough evidence for me.
It even says, so mote it be on the obelisk. I mean, it's clearly a magical item. So it's just part of my daily rituals that I enter the tree and make it a very active meditation. As for people who have no idea of the Kabbalah, I guess it remains to be seen if I do it well enough. I try to do my best, but also I take it for granted that the internet exists, and if someone wants to learn more about Kabbalah, which if you're inspired to get to know that particular cult. And I use cult very liberally in my book. So I refer to everything that people devote themselves to as a cult. No negative associations with that word, with cult in general. So if people want to find out more about Kabbalah, you just look up Kabbalah online. And there's also plenty of great podcast. I'm sure, you know, you've had people on. Have you had people on your show who are sort of more expert in the esoteric arts?
Yeah. I mean, most of us know what you're talking about. I mean, but I'm curious when you got interested in the tree yourself. So you were studying the tree, and then you discovered it, like,
right,
built through the architecture of your city, right?
Right. It's sort of like I'd always liked being in this park. I'd always liked being around it, and then I just got another piece of information that explained why it felt so good to be there.
Ah. So you basically okay, but your belief, though, technically, is that somebody left it for you there.
Not left it for me particularly, but left it. It seems there are two possibilities. One, either it's intentional, and then it's been part of the plan of the City Olympia from the beginning of Olympia, and a lot of renovations that have been made to the park in the last 30 or 40 years that bring the tree into even closer alignment, or brings the park into closer alignment with the tree. Those people are aware of those original intentions, and it's all sort of part of one master plan. That's possible. And I think, I actually think that's probably the most likely, just because the other option is that there is this Freemasonic statue at the base of this tree. There are all the markings that the tree is there, and the people who are making the renovations to it are totally unaware of that and are simply...
acting out the plan of the universe?
Right. Are really just doing what the tree wants them to do, which I think that's a way more sort of mystical, magical thinking answer to what's going on here than that, yeah, there are still Freemasons who are in some sort of power in the city and are building their... I mean, if I would do it, if I was on the city council, I don't have to be a Freemason. I would, and there was an opportunity to make this tree more tree-like, I would do it. And it had nothing to do with allegiance to, some order.
But this tree has basically been key in your own spiritual advancement as, present day, right? I mean, that's what you're dealing
Absolutely.
With.
Absolutely. Yeah, the main thing is regardless of how it got there, is that it's there and we can use it. And my experience is that it is really, really powerful.
Right. And the thing I like about your tree is that a lot of times the stuff online, it's a cerebral mental meditation, and you're actually in your body physically running. So you're having the experience and then interacting with the experience, which is something that I think a lot of people need but don't know how to do.
It's almost like a personal process, right?
Yeah.
But in his body.
A ritual, daily meditation.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's vigorous. It's not like, it definitely is cerebral. It's definitely up in the head in a lot of ways because that map is overlaid and you know where you are. But yeah, it's a full body engagement with it. Because I don't just walk it. I mean, I will, lots of times I will walk it. But when I'm on my own, I run it. And it's a vigorous practice, which is great. I think I think that's part of the value. Because when you're reaching the supernals, your body is is flushing toxins through your sweat and your lungs, your whole system is active and open.
Now, other than the tree in Olympia, if you excuse the phrase, do you run that town? I mean, because you're involved in the music scene locally, and that's a lot of, does that have to do with your book as well?
Well, yeah, there's a whole, the book is about Olympia and about my experience here.
And you were born there? I mean, that's where you grew up?
I grew up here. My family moved here in 1970. I was 2 years old. My dad was a founding faculty member at the Evergreen State College. And in answer to your question, I do not and have not ever run this town. there was a time when I was very, very active as hosting Radio 8 Ball on Chaos, putting on events at the Olympia Film Society at the Capitol Theater. I had my band. I worked at the co-op. I was very, very involved. And then around the time that I was drawn to these practices, I ran afoul of the people who in my book I refer to as the boring haters. You have to read it to get the whole story because it's quite convoluted. But it led to the fact where to a situation where now Radio 8 Ball is no longer on the air at Chaos. I'm no longer associated with the Capitol Theater, Olympia Film Society, except as someone who they took shots at. And our co-op is in the midst of eating itself by wading into the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, or dragging our peaceful little hamlet into that conflict in a way that just that doesn't really make anything better, but definitely makes things worse here. Because it's such a passionate, people believe so passionately in that that it's destroyed friendships and really made the co-op, which was a sort of a gathering spot for all of Olympia, into a battleground of religious and political ideologies.
Which is strange because, so you're saying this external political issue has come into this community center, and then depending on where you lie on that issue, all of a sudden this is the line in the sand.
Right. And then it's particularly confusing. I'm Jewish, and as a Jewish person who's not particularly passionate about the issues of Israel or Palestine, except in the broad sort of global picture of, you know, right and might and power and, you know, and the distribution of it. But as a Jewish person, you're supposed to either, like, you're supposed to have a strong opinion about Israel. And if you don't, then that also, you know, not having a strong opinion is also drags you into the conflict. The conflict's so strong that you're not allowed to have a nuanced view of it. You know, either Israel is this horrible monster that is ruling the world, or Israel is totally put upon and is, we have to support the government of Israel. But there's some place in the middle, which is, well, I don't want to even go into the larger because you could do five shows about it on a podcast that was devoted to those issues. The main thing is that it's when those issues come up, the people who are the loudest or the best at manipulating the message tend to control the message, and it leads to what I consider to be an unhealthy environment for a little town on the banks of a vortex that should be making magic and art rather than labeling, you know, our neighbors as fascists or dupes or whatever.
All part of the process, I guess. But am I of the understanding that Radio 8 Ball is no more, or?
Well, Radio 8 Ball exists. I'm working on translating it to TV. But no, it's no longer on the air, and that's one of the things my book seeks to take care of.
Okay, I see.
Describe this. It's really interesting because it's almost like would you say almost like shadow work? A little bit, where I'm seeing the boring haters almost as in the hero's journey. That's the opposition that you're having to face. But then at the same time, how do you do that in a meaningful way that's going to actually reach people? Is that
well?
The intention
in
of
my
the
case,
book?
I wrote a Gonzo self-help book to try and help myself and draw attention to a pattern which is specific to Olympia, but I don't think is isolated to Olympia. I think that's why I describe the boring haters as just like there's the people who sort of say, how dare you? Like, it's one thing, like, I don't mind anyone who's like, I think you suck, and I don't think, you know, and I want to argue with you about why your book or your song or your movie or your attitude sucks. That's, you know, that's like our mentor, our, you know, SyncBook leader, Alan Abadesa Green, yelling at old ladies on the subway. I mean, that's good, vital communication and interaction. Now, the boring haters are more like people who are just offended that when someone's doing something that's cool and want to put a stop to it.
Right.
You know, that's not the way we do things here. You know, that's just too intense. We can't work with that. We can't, you know, boring haters love to use the word we when they're talking about themselves, which is appropriate in terms of my book, because one of the things I talk about is the balanced diet of cults and the many consciousnesses that live in us. And so when the boring haters use the royal we, they are talking about the quorum of their own consciousness, agreeing that something is happening out there that's a threat to their fragile idea of how things are supposed to work. And if things don't work the way they're supposed to, then we just need to take care of that by any means necessary, even if it means cheating, even if it means lying, even if it, you know, whatever you need to do to stop the offending awesomeness that reminds you that you're basically boring and hateful.
Actually, Alan and I have had a lot of conversations to that effect, where everyone has an idea of what normal is, but in essence, you know, there is no normal because everything's constantly flowing. But we want to hold on to the idea of normal, and then depending on, you know, how much of a structure you build up around the idea of normal, then you create those rules, and then the barrier between anything coming into that that's new.
But see, I just have a problem with this because, I mean, like, we're involved in the study of synchronicity. I mean, all three of us are. And so, like, your radio 8-ball basically is this practice. And do you think that the psychology of synchronicity is more about learning that everything is in the place that it needs to be when it needs to be, or do you think it's more of seeing meaning in the world, Andras?
I would probably go for the former. I think that the experience is the latter of finding meaning in the world, but I do think that ultimately the lesson or the message of synchronicity is that everything is in its right place at the always, and it's really up to us to realign our consciousness with what is synced. So what we do is we sync up. You know, life is in sync all the time. And when as it relates to, like, that's sort of how I think of the boring haters in my story, is that they, you know, they're still, in a strange way, your enemies are still your allies. They're pointing out your shadow. They're pointing out the areas where you can get got, whether it's, like, physically, like, taking my show off the air, or get got, like, driving me to the madness, level lengths of madness that it would take to get someone to write a book like this. And we're all part of this, you know, this psychological ecosystem. So, yeah.
What I'm thinking about is how, so you're describing your local story, but from the synchronicity standpoint, this is kind of the story that's playing out right now macrocosmically. So I'm going through something similar, and so I'm wondering, how does this end?
The book's written. You are goddamn sync rapture, man.
No, this isn't a sync rapture question.
Okay. Usually in how it ends, it usually goes down to, like, what's all coming to. But that's not what you're trying to say.
This is what's so exciting is, this is the hero's journey. You know, he's talking about the dragon in the village, and right now, 2012, what's going to happen? And so how do you feel about 2012,
Audra? It's sort of like asking how you feel about, you know, your skin. You know, I'm living in 2012. I can't really – and
Right.
Because of the way this book has come about, that it was inspired on the summer solstice. I started writing it not knowing I was even writing a book, but just an explosion of writing on the summer solstice that then was finished by the fall, like was sort of the first draft was finished by the fall equinox. We wrapped it around the solstice. It's coming out on for the spring equinox. I find myself much even more encoded into 2012. And its rhythms than I thought I would be, and I've been aware of this concept since probably 1988 in the harmonic convergence.
1988 in the harmonic convergence.
Are you familiar with that, Jose Arguelles, who created the 13 moon natural time calendar or the dream spell that's based on? He organized a thing in 1988 called the Harmonic Convergence, which was sort of the first. I'm really not an expert in this, but the first sort of galactic alignings that led up to what we're supposed to be experiencing in 2012 were first lining up. And there were gatherings all over the world, and not long after that, the Berlin Wall fell, and a lot of people felt like that was the just like, if you can look at 9/11 as a gateway or event, you can also look at the harmonic convergence as sort of its opposing gateway event, in that no one got killed.
What's interesting about that is they actually bookend each other. So the Berlin Wall is 11/9/89, I think. But then they write the date in Europe backwards, and so it's still 9/11.
Ah, that's interesting. Anyway, as far as 2012, and you know what I think one of the things that's most interesting to me about this book, Accidental Initiations, is that it doesn't, like, the book doesn't end with its ending. It challenges so many things that are local and live and active, and brings up things that are very much very present, which is why I'm glad I have the follow-up blog, Accidental Initiations 2, which I started right after we pretty much wrapped the structure of the book.
I was going to ask you. So is this right now where you're? If someone's coming to the call not knowing anything about you, is that a good place to start to find out what's going on with you and where to, access your newest work?
Well, as a writer, you'd look up Accidental Initiations 2. As an actor, you'd look me up on IMDb. As a Radio 8 Ball guy, I'd check out the Radio 8 Ball Facebook or our Radio 8 Ball page, radio8ball.com. And as a bartender, I'm available for bartending gigs. So if you run an honorable bar, I might be your man. But right now, with this book coming out, I think like a lot of the spells and the, I don't want to say spells because I'm not actually, I don't know if I, I guess whatever. I'll play fast and loose with some language. Some of the spells that are in it are just beginning to come to fruition. And the way I think about it a lot is, like, if this book were a movie, the book would come out at the end of the second act. And the third act is about to play out.
I see. Okay, and so that was what I was speaking about when I was speaking about 2012. You know, so I feel like the world's having this moment, and your response to that moment is you want to do something positive and create art. And so it's your moment. The world's moment isn't unique to you, but you're actually influencing the flow, the direction the world's going to take. How do you feel about where that's going to go, and what's your hope?
Well, I hope it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, I mean, to me, it's, you know, I'm an artist. I want things to be entertaining and to be engaging and fun. and, you know, messy sometimes, but only messy in the context of our piddling idea of how things are supposed to work. Usually the messy things, when you look at them in retrospect, were perfectly awesome. So, yeah, I plan to play out this battle, I don't want to say, yeah, I guess battle, in the sense of, like, playing knights and dragons, is going to happen here in the city of Olympia, and it's going to be, you know, that's where we're going to have this moment. Okay,
I got to stop you for a second, because the whole time when you're saying Olympia, it conjures images of gods and shit. But it's funny, because I just got through watching all of your movies and stuff, and I came to the realization that you're, in a way, Mars. Like, your composite character is very warlike and has a lot of connotations with the Red Sun, which on the Kabbalah Tree of Life, in my opinion, is Geburah. Right, I'm saying that
yeah.
wrong.
Yeah, Geburah.
Geburah. And so it's like, it's funny because, like, I already had that patterned in my head, and you keep saying Olympia, and it clicked in my head that, like, Olympia is, like, the mountains of the gods and whatnot. So it's just funny.
Believe me, I know. I mean, the poetry of this place is amazing. It's a writer couldn't ask for a better Dublin, except maybe for Dublin.
Ah, you're a Joycean.
Well, if you're going to write a psychedelic book about being exiled in your town, especially one that deals with anti-Semitism and takes place on June 15th, you know, you can't avoid the occasional Joycean epiphany.
See, that's also what ran through your characters, is you were an intellect in just about everything that I saw you in as well. Do you think, speaking from your experience with the film industry, do you think that there is tight casting? A lot of how we synchromystics break down movies and composite characters and such, is there such thing as stereotype casting?
Well, yeah, there is. It depends. I guess it really depends in what way you mean. Like,
well, how did your experience work? You said somewhere in an interview that I read that actually, I think it was in your book, you don't have the luxury of picking your movies yet.
Yeah,
so,
no, I've always just taken what's offered, pretty much. And I would also say I have taken almost everything that I've been offered, and I have never been in a movie that I would watch. I mean,
Nightmare on Elm Street is classic. I remember that movie. I've seen that movie dozens of fucking times.
No, I have been fully initiated into the cult of Nightmare. I love going to the horror conventions and meeting the people for whom it's a really big deal. What I am is a big film fan, so I know what it's like to have a cultish love for whatever it is that you're into. I'm just saying it's interesting to me that, you know, if I was picking my career, I would never have been in any of the films that I've been in. And from a synchromistic standpoint, I think, again, it's sort of like the tree. That's more interesting.
Yes,
than,
it is.
Like, I think it's more interesting that my acting career lines up with the energies that I actually carry, my father's or the Geburah energy.
Right.
We haven't really talked about my dad, but he's a big part
yeah.
of the book, and he led dream seminars in the 70s that inspired
right.
Radio 8 Ball, and he passed away. He died of Alzheimer's, and that's part of what brought me back to Olympia and into this.
When did he die? When was his death?
95.
So this was pre-Radio 8 Ball for sure.
Yeah. No, I think Radio 8 Ball was, in a lot of ways, part of my process of integrating him as a spirit
companion.
Dad,
isn't it? It's inspired by your dad, for sure, right? I can't remember how you put it, but I think that you mentioned it in the Think Book, for sure, about
yeah.
how his ideas, he used to present students' dreams. I mean, he would have them write down their dreams and then present it to a class, and then they would all analyze it as if it was their own dream?
Yeah.
And you do the same with music?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, it's and again, not but it was not a conscious thing. It wasn't like I thought, how can I do my dad's work with Radio 8 Ball? It was I found myself just being drawn to playing with this format. Even before 98, that was something we used to do with our
band.
Well,
it's creepy though, Andras. It is very, very creepy because of the Nightmare on Elm Street. There's that scene in the classroom where the girl falls asleep and her and you're in the background the whole entire time. You're like part of that dream class.
Yep. I know.
That's creepy, dude. That's so fucking cool. And I noticed because I watched Alienation, your guest appearance in that, which you probably never watched, but you're in the classroom in that one, too. That's like the main plot of you being in the classroom. And then I noticed in the Saved by the Bell. It's called Miss Good Morning, Miss Bliss.
Yeah.
But everybody knows it as like part of the way I thought when I was younger was part of the what was it, when they sold it as a package to TBS or something for reruns. And
yeah.
I remember seeing that episode when I was, but that's your point. You're in a classroom. It's called Good Morning, Miss Bliss. So it's sort of like carrying on that. I think Alan said that before, too. Like it carries on that good morning, like you're waking up from a dream vibe.
Oh, that's great. I never picked up on that.
But see, you're also dyslexic in the Miss or Good Morning, Miss Bliss, too. So it's like because you can't read in dreams. And that shows up again in Alienation because it deals with literature in the classroom. And then also in the scene in Nightmare on Elm Street is where the girl's words on her page all rearrange, like her language is being mixed up. And all of a sudden, all of the math on her page turns into Freddy, whatever, talking to her. And then the shit hits the fan. But see, there's something there. There's a thread there, and I feel that it has to do with your dad. To me, that's exciting because it gives us, like, you know, a little – we could chart this with other actors, I bet.
Oh, yeah. No, the thing that I think is going to be really interesting and the thing I'm hoping to do with my book is to get this in the hands of more actors, especially the ones who are in the position to – pick their roles. I really want to see what happens once this thing realizes it's being watched.
Right.
In some ways, I don't think it'll be as fun, but I think that there's this moment, like this balance point, where right now there's been this thing, the synchronistic connection with film and consciousness that has been going on and nobody's really been noticing it. And in the last 10 years, all of a sudden people are starting to notice it.
Right.
And I think we're about, and maybe we've even hit the point. Maybe there are already synchronistics who are making movies, not making movies about movies.
I think so. I think some, because these motherfuckers, you know, when you watch Transformers 3 and you know that the motherfucker's been reading up on Richard Hoagland, do you know what I'm saying? Like, these dudes are online. They know subcultures. And I think that synchromysticism has gotten to the point where it is a subculture. I'm going on alternative news sites and seeing the word synchromysticism. I'm going to, different podcasts and hearing it being said. So it's there. It's like you said, though. It's like right on the cusp, right at the beginning of the fool's journey. It's about to pop.
And what I think is that, I think it's really cool when people, whether it's George Lucas, I mean, he's the one who I think of as the original sort of master of that, of taking Joseph Campbell, of consciously overlaying these archetypes on a very pop culture idiom of the adventure story and just film and then throwing in the Kurosawa. I just think it's brilliant. What he did with Star Wars, and it got me, and it initiated me and the whole generation of kids. Still
oh,
is.
I think that I like the way your title, unintentional or
accidental initiation.
Accidental AI. Accidental initiation.
Yeah. But I think that there's something that's really cool about doing that, about stuffing your film with arcane references. But I don't think of that as synchronistic film. I wouldn't think of that as synchronistic filmmaking, because I think the idea is not to control the message, but actually to open it up to allow as much to come through as possible. That's the whole idea of Radio 8 Ball. Like, you can have an amazing experience going to a show and watching a band play their set. If you love that band and the venue's decent, and probably if you have done something to yourself to get yourself to an ecstatic state, whether that's attention or whether that's taking some mushrooms or whether that's just being 13 and going to your first concert and the first time you experience that, all of those things are like, you know, will make it mind-blowing. But only if the situation is right. And the thing about a Radio 8 Ball show is you don't know who you're going to experience as the band, or I guess you do on that particular night. But by asking a question, picking a song at random, and then having them play whatever song they have to, it opens up this space for sync to enter, for sync to sync, in a way that you couldn't. If you tried to come up with the most psychedelic, Grateful Dead-y, you know, there's nothing particularly psychedelic about psychedelic music. What's psychedelic is what elevates your consciousness up into the third eye and into the crown. And music has the capacity to do that, but synchronicity always does that. And the best way to get synchronicity is to let go of the reins. And so, like, when you talk about a film like Transformers, or we talk about Star Wars, where there's someone who has a vision who's stuffing it with these images, those are tightly controlled sets. Especially Transformers, it's a multi-million-dollar set. They don't have any time to sort of like allow the mystery to descend. But I think that so I think true synchronistic filmmakers would be the ones who are making smaller, more intimate pictures where they can do the Kubrick thing or what David Lynch did with Eraserhead or whatever, is to take 6 months or a year to make a film with people who are syncing with natural rhythms and doing it almost ritualistically to the point where something else is allowed to emerge. And then we get true syncy films. But I think it remains to be tested if that's going to, like, film, because it's an expensive medium, is at odds with being able to be relaxed enough to allow something to emerge. Anyway, that's my rant on synchronistic film.
And so if you're just joining us, this is Andras Jones ranting with us and for us on 42 Minutes Today. We're about 37 minutes through, and as you talk about Radio 8 Ball and your own local experience with synchronicity, I'm curious how you found this larger synchromistic world and that the idea of synchromisticism.
I'll tell you, I fell in love with someone who turned me on to Jake Coetzee's films, and the one with the Kurt Russell, the 911 thing, that was really mind-blowing to me, and I knew that I had to have him on Radio 8 Ball. And so he sort of was the light that I was attracted to, but then it was really little Dougie Bowles coming and finding me at the Liberty Bar and letting me know that there was actually a community here of people who were syncing up and paying attention to these things. And that was pretty much how it happened.
Yeah, so it was the summer of 2010 after I traveled to Winnipeg and met Jake and Jim and Kevin and Strange Eye. Then I came back to the Seattle area and I met Michael of Gosporn, and then the next day I met Andras at the Liberty Bar on Capitol Hill, which was my old neighborhood.
That's cool as hell.
It was funny because Alan was asking me about that last night. What was that first meeting like? And I said, oh, it was great. You know, we just talked and talked and talked, and I got in all kinds of trouble because we stayed so long.
It was great. And honestly, it was one of those things that it was great at the time, but in retrospect, it's golden because now I know all these people. I know that adventure. I know where that scene fits in the movie. And I tell you, that's a, you know, you're playing a great role in this this whole thing, Doug.
I started feeling that all the time.
That's funny because we're all playing all the roles, though. So, like, I definitely feel that fool energy, but then I can see how you've got the fool energy, too.
Well, I'll tell
you. What's so hilarious is I think we both wrote the same book. He describes him, and I'm so excited to read it, but I wrote the same book, and they're both coming out from Think Book Press, and Andras's book is available the 19th.
That's the idea. Next Monday, 3/19. While you're waiting for it, if you're just people who are listening, do me a favor. Part of the book is part. Thing about the book is doing this this big play that is going to play out once the book comes out, and part of that has to do with Radio 8 Ball in Olympia. When you read the book, you'll understand. But in the meantime, go to Ole Music Awards. Look it up on your computer. You're listening to this on your computer. Go to Olean Music Awards, and when it asks for your favorite artist and band, put in Andras Jones and Radio 8 Ball. Because if Radio 8 Ball gets picked for this, then we end up on the stage at the Capitol Theater, which is an old vaudeville theater that was a part of is a big part of my story, and that would be on May 5th, 5/5. And if you've been paying any attention at all, Sinkers, and we haven't even talked about it, the fives and the ones are coming up big. This season, and being at the Capitol Theater on 5/5/2012, which is 5, and doing Radio 8 Ball magic on that stage and bringing some justice and vortex energy back to Olympia, the land of the gods, you can support that by going to olemusicawards.com. You can only vote once, but vote for me and for Radio 8 Ball, unless you have a more favorite band from Olympia, in which case, do the right thing, vote for them. But if you're listening in Germany,
okay. Well, I think we are running out of time, and so it was.
That's why I went into promotional mode. I'm a pro, baby.
I'm a pro. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. Hey, spell it out for us. Spell the .com out for us.
The Ole Oly Music Music Awards .com.
Okay, it's always really a pleasure talking to you, Andras. I'm really glad we had you on. And
yeah.
We look forward to your book. So,
March 19th, Accidental Initiations in the Kabbalistic Tree of Olympia. Buy it and then come to Olympia and let's go for a walk.
That sounds great. Thank you so much. Take care, everyone.